This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bites. Just thought I'd sing along, you know, that's what I do.
Enterprise Biz Bites.
I'm singing because tomorrow, technically, we have a rock concert of sorts. It's Enterprise Rocks Conference tomorrow, of course, happening at Connection at Nexus in Bangsa South. Hope you've all got your tickets. We will see you there, of course. It'll be a lot of fun. It's going to be a long day, but it's going to be well worth it. Make sure you stick it out. There's going to be food. You can network. There'll be tea and quay.
A rock band.
Yeah. And Chris and Uncle Arvin will be there.
I mean, I'll be running around like a headless chicken.
Yeah.
But that's entertaining too.
But that's all good fun. That's happening tomorrow, of course. Make sure you're there or be square. Right. We're asking you guys to give us some feedback regarding the have you had your talk with your kids about money? If you haven't had that talk, how did your parents kind of tell you about how to look after your cash moving forward? We've had a couple of tweets. We've had a couple of WhatsApp messages. Let's go over to WhatsApp first, see what we got.
Yeah. So this comes from Ali, and he's talking about a very interesting board game. He says you can learn cash flow through a board game. There was a locally invented board game called Smart Money to help children or adults with financial literacy. What it does is, once played, it rewires the way we think about spending and investing and becoming financially independent instead of dependent. Initially, playing the game will make you lose a lot if you don't understand how it works. This is the best training I have experienced with my own kids, but need to be played regularly while having fun.
Interesting.
Yeah, like a simulation of the real world.
Smart money.
Yeah.
Very nice. I want to play that board game now.
I'll make a note of that.
Yeah, we should have a game night.
Unlike Monopoly, where people cheat.
The whole point of Monopoly is not to teach you about finance. It's how to make your family angry at you.
Yeah, very much so.
And then on Twitter,
We moved on to Risk, where it's all about World
War.
Let's move on.
And then on Twitter as well, we've got Hannah, who says, yes, we tell our kids that the car and the house belong to the banks and we don't own the stuff until we pay off our debts. And they go, huh?
Right. That's a common one, that.
Correct. But maybe, you know, if you explain the concept of debt, that might be a fun way to, well, not fun way, but a simple way to ease your kids' understanding of exactly what that meant.
So we don't own any of this stuff, but, you know, it's ours.
But we use it. It's fine.
The banks do.
It's on long-term loan.
Yeah.
Right. Story number three. Treat your decisions like job candidates.
Yeah, so this is on an article that was featured on the Washington Post. It's a very long article. Again, we'll have the link up on the podcast page for you to actually read the whole thing as well. But the gist of it is, this guy, a Nobel Prize winning psychologist, Daniel Kahneman, published a paper on Monday together with two professors, Dan Lovallo and Olivier Ciboni, and it outlined a process for making big strategic decisions. So things like whether to make an acquisition, launch a new category of products, or invest in a startup. And it's called MAP, which stands for Mediating Assessments Protocol. And the idea is, with this protocol, you put off gut-based decision-making until a choice can be informed by a number of separate factors. Or in other words, whenever you approach a decision, look at it as if, you know, you've got, like, okay, the components of what makes a good decision and what makes a bad decision, in the way that, for example, you might look at a candidate for a job. What makes them a good candidate? What makes them a bad candidate? What are the components of that? And then you decide, right?
So, with you so far?
Yes. So Kahneman said that while it may be common for teams of executives to make briefing books that are divided into topics or chapters for big decisions like an acquisition, it's not as common to have a decision divided into subcomponents and each one evaluated independently. So when you're making an important decision, any option is like a candidate, and you should think of what are the essential dimensions that will make a difference between a good option and an option that would be rejected, and you should look at those dimensions one at a time. Every company in the world has a process in place to, like, decide how to buy paperclips, but then when it comes to these larger decisions, there's no process because they're kind of unusual purchases or decisions, right? So the other reason why kind of strategic decisions tend to have fewer processes is because they're made at the top of the organization and people are just kind of like, I don't know, I guess that's fine, and they'll just trust whoever's at the top, right? So in order to kind of make this MAP protocol work, right, there are two tricks. Number one, divide the team evaluating the factors. So, for example, have an HR specialist make the talent assessments, for instance, while a due diligence team evaluates the quality of the business. So for all the components that you decide on, like judging your decision on, have a separate person or team to evaluate those components so that you kind of, you avoid groupthink,
right?
You avoid this whole thing. And the other is to assign a relative percentile score to make sure things stay more concrete. Don't just be like, it's good, it's bad, I don't know, whatever. Actually, like, sit down, put a scale in for yourself and use that scale in order to make things a lot clearer for you as to exactly how good or bad the decision's going to be. So that's what it is, basically. If you want to have the full shebang of it, go to the Washington Post article later. But that's what it is, and I thought it was an interesting thing to bring up.
And Arvin.
Yeah. Yes. So this goes against like everything that normally people say, like, you know, go with your gut, go with your instinct and stuff like that, which I thought was like really interesting, because most places when this, you know, when they tell you about how to make a decision, they go, you know, listen to your instincts, like listen to what your instincts are, that the tiny voice in your head tells you. It's super rare to find people who say don't listen to the tiny voice, because any decision you make needs to be, you know, it needs to be like a science. You need to know like the factors going in and the results coming out and what it could mean, what could go wrong and stuff like that, which it takes getting used to, to sort of like ignore that you know, that very naggy.
And that grab of emotion as well that sometimes you can attach to a decision of you know.
Yeah.
I think it's like, I know it sounds really silly, but when you're... If you're afraid of heights and you're flying the plane, the idea of heights is kind of lost because you're so high up that you don't even... This do you know what I mean?
So
are you
actually, with me on that? So what the article says about this is because the reason why we feel so uncomfortable thinking in this way is because our brains are geared towards what's called excessive coherence, or the tendency to suppress contradicting evidence. So in your example, you're in a plane, you know that it's high, but you're like, I gotta just ignore that it's high because I don't want to face that emotion right now.
Uncertainty.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
There you go. But I think this goes for big decisions, right? Not the, you know, those small initial decisions, those gut ones. Like, you know, do follow your gut to a point. Yeah. But I think it's interesting that this is now a process for those massive decisions.
Yeah, but even the massive ones, it's like we love the romantic idea of following your gut feeling, you know, like listening to your instincts and doing what's right. Because we've heard like so many success stories of people going, you know, don't do that, it'll fail. There's no future in this, in Apple, let's say.
And then someone was like, no, and Steve Jobs, I'm going to follow my heart.
Yeah, Steve Jobs goes into like his garage and goes like, I'm going to build computers, and he sells it and he becomes Steve Jobs.
Right.
Yeah. And then, you know, the story is he followed instincts. But for all you know, he had like a chart, which doesn't make it into like the movies and the books and stuff. He probably had like a chart that he wrote down about what could go wrong, what would happen if he, I don't know, I'm just like assuming.
I stubbed my toe.
Yeah. It hurt.
It hurt.
Yeah.
Day two, bought shoes.
Day three, you know, bought socks.
Yeah.
Yeah, but all these things don't make it into the romantic, like, biography and stuff.
Right.
So it's nice. It is nice to see, like, a different perspective on how to make, like, big decisions and stuff.
Do you do something similar, though, when you make bigger decisions? Let's say, for example, you know, you're deciding to buy a house, or you're deciding to buy a car, or, you know, find a new housemate or anything like that. Do you kind of think like this? You know, do you go home and think, what are the pros, what are the cons? How do I weigh it up?
Okay, like big decisions, I think this is a bit weird, because big decisions, especially stuff like, you know, picking a new job or career or something that you want, a new venture and stuff, for me, personally, I normally pick the one that I'm afraid of. Because that's the one that if I'm comfortable with something and I'm like, you know, I know I can do this, I know I'll be good at this, and I can, you know, it can be like a career and stuff. For some reason, I'll pick the other one that I'm not so sure about. Just because in the long run, I think it'll be more interesting.
That's interesting.
I'm risk averse. So I tend to just play it really safe. And I do overthink a lot of things too.
Okay, time for a break, folks. Let us know about your thoughts regarding money management for kids. 018-789-8899 is the number on WhatsApp. On Twitter, we're at BFM Radio. We're going to take a short break. Music coming up from Primal Scream with Rocks. Sorry, Jailbird. When we get back, how to reframe your thinking about the boring parts of your job. Because we all have boring parts in our jobs, believe me. Time for a short break. 018-789-8899. This is Primal Scream on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.